Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Southern Community Soup Kitchen. And I'm getting sick of saying this. Well, not really. But we're back after another win. One more on the board, away from home, against MK Dons. Sunderland 2-1. Doesn't get much better than that, to be fair. And we're going to talk about it today. I'm joined by our man in Milton Keynes, Brett. How are we doing?
Yeah, morning, Gav. Yeah, I can't get tired of hearing you say, after another win. If you say that 46 times this season, then I'll be delighted.
Yeah, it isn't actually getting boring, but it might be fans of other clubs, if they're tuning in, they might be sick of Sunderland winning. I think most people like to revel in our misery, don't they?
Oh, very much.
And also here is Martin. How are you doing, mate?
I'm champion. Aye, my heart rate's just about back to normal after that last quarter of an hour of the game on Saturday, but I think it's our best start to a season, 3 wins out of 3 since 1925-26 season.
I can remember it well.
Aye, well, you know, we remember it well. I think we got 4 wins out of 4 that season, so we've got a little way to go. But those scores, right, were 3-1, 6-2, 5-2 and 6-2. So in terms of entertainment, I think the old-timers had a little bit on this team, but cracking 3 points, eh?
Yeah, well, that's it, yeah. We're up to third after 2 games. I don't really take much notice of the table, to be fair, at this stage of the season, but it is nice to see us up the top end. Joint top, actually, if you're actually bothered. But a pleasing start, Brett, isn't it? You know, we can't ask for much more than 3 wins in all competitions. They've hit the ground running, and I mean, you were there. What was it like?
It was great, you know. And for me personally, it's always a very strange game playing the MK Dons. You know, I actually parked outside my work, and then I run around the Don Stadium a couple of times a week, having thousands of Sunderland fans turn up to my home is such a bizarre thing. But it was great, you know, the fans were in great voice. I think where obviously a lot of the Northern fans enjoyed it so much last week, being the first game back into a stadium, there were so many of the Southern supporters that this was our first game.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'd say we were, just from the off, the fans, you could tell we were really up for it. And say the players, I think, did, you know, Lee Johnson said it himself, you know, the players do respond to that. And it was great. I'd say, well, we'll go into the game in more depth, but, you know, they actually ground out that result, and I think the fans can take a lot of credit from that.
Yeah, that's one thing that Lee Johnson touched on after the game, didn't he, Martin, was just the impact the fans have had in the first 3 games. It's sort of carried us over the line, because when you look at it, I know we're all over the moon with the results, but all 3 games were a little bit nervy and a little bit sort of tense towards the end, and having a good vocal backing can make a huge difference to the players, and they didn't have it last year.
They didn't, and it's obviously Lee Johnson's first real experience of Sunderland fans, isn't it? And he's had, obviously, the Port Vale game is a little different, but he's certainly had 2 big games where it has been sort of backs to the wall for the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, hasn't it? And the crowd's really got behind the team and has you know, powered the team home, and long may that continue.
Yeah, so we'll go on to the game then. The first goal, to be fair, I know it was a bit of a scruffy one, but I love those types of goals, because Ross Stewart's got to be in that position to tap it home and poke it home, hasn't he, Brett? And I think people were a little bit worried that he wasn't going to be able to score the type of goals that Charlie White did for us last season. I don't want to talk too much about Charlie White, but he was scoring those types of goals last season in the 6-yard box, just sort of tapping them in. And it was a cracking ball from Aidan McGeady. I mean, it's been good to watch Ross Stewart's progression, hasn't it?
It's been great. And as you say, the danger is with Ross Stewart at the moment is we are going to keep linking him back to Charlie Wyke. And I think so far he's proven that he's more than capable of that mantle. I think we just want to, you know, put Charlie Wyke to bed and just, you know, let's all just say, just keep backing Ross Stewart because he's a very, very good player.
Yeah.
And you say it was a scruffy goal. The build-up to it, though, was actually really good.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel getting it out wide and then the McGeady ball in. And say it was one of those strange goals. We weren't quite sure if it was going to count or something. Well, did something happen in the box to, you know, it was going to get disallowed? But, yeah, you say he's got to be in the right place at the right time. And Ross Stewart, I think, is probably going to prove a really, really big player for us this season.
Yeah, I want to go in a little bit more depth with Ross Stewart a bit later, but yeah, the second goal, you've just mentioned Dan Neil there. I mean, the pass to Embleton, that's just pure class, isn't it, Martin? Like, I know the first one is deflected back to him, but it's that quick thing in the sharpness of the pass just to put it on a plate to Embleton, and then the finish was outstanding.
It was a class goal all around, wasn't it? I think Dan Neil's shown in the game so far this season, whether he's been at left back or in midfield, his eye for a pass is beautiful. And it's kind of it's on a different level to a lot of the midfielders that we've had over the past few seasons, isn't it? He's smart with it, and he's progressive with it, and he's intelligent with it. And that was just a beautifully weighted ball through to Embleton. And like the finish from Embleton was superb as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, sat the keeper down. I love those ones.
You know, if he thought he was offside and he just, you know, cockily put it away, or he, you know, he left the goalkeeper on his arse, and it was such a good finish. And that's his first goal for the club. You know, it's not as if he's been a regular scorer for us. That's his first one that he's got. And obviously he's scored for Blackpool and for Grimsby in loan spells, but he put that away so well. And, you know, the two of them combined just show the, you know, it's that exuberance of youth. It's the quality that we've got that hasn't been, you know, given a pathway at the first team over previous seasons. And it's just brilliant to see those two and others actually getting a chance, but coming up with the goods as well.
Yeah, and then it was Dan Neil again for the penalty decision. Played a lovely left-footed through ball in behind the Milton Keynes defence, which, to be fair, Ross Stewart's movement made it, you know, completed the move. But, yeah, another great pass from Dan Neil. Stewart's movement up top, causing panic at the back. He's clipped, he's brought down. The MK Dons defenders didn't seem too happy, Brett, did they, that it was given, but I think it was a penalty.
Well, no, I thought it was an absolute bang-on penalty because I was literally right in front of it because we actually had to move seats during the second half because I had my 8-year-old daughter with me and she was dying in the sun. So we moved to that shady bit and it literally was bang in front of us and I thought it was a penalty all day long. You know, I know on the Quest last night they said he tripped over his own feet. I don't think he did.
I heard that. Now, so I rolled it back and I was like, he didn't?
he did. It's a bit like the penalty last week against Wigan. He gets himself in between the ball and the defender. He is, you know, he's all leggy. He clips him, he's going to go down. So, definite penalty for me, that.
I think it was a bit fortunate, fortunate, I think. Yeah. I think it's one of those, if that had been given against us, we'd have been furious about it. Like.
I don't agree. Lee Johnson talked about it after the game and he said he'd already had a word with Stewart about using his body better and trying to get into those positions. And so I think obviously the striker has to make a meal of it. Ross Stewart's got to go down. He's got to make it look convincing. But if there's contact, there's contact. That's the way football is these days, isn't it? It's not like the 80s or the 90s where you've got to practically break somebody's leg.
It's a contact sport, man.
Yeah, you've got to practically break somebody's leg to give away a penalty or a free kick. I think all you've got to do is make a bit of contact and I don't think the defender's got a case for it, really, but I guess I'm a little bit more current day in my thinking when it comes to penalties. I know what you're saying. You know, it's not like a reducer from Kevin Ball putting someone on their arse. It's very slight, but there was contact there.
Yeah, still think it was harsh. But you'll take it, won't you? You'll take it all day long.
No, all day. Yeah, I'm not going to whinge. I mean, we've had some penalties already, haven't we? So their goal, though, let's talk about that because, well, it was awful from Lee Burge. I mean, he takes about 10 seconds to think about what he's doing. So it's not as if it was like a rash snap decision. He's got the ball in his hands. He's looking. He's trying to work out where to play it. He rolls it at about 100 mile an hour. Nowhere near Dan Neil, who then has to chase the ball down, loses possession. And then to be fair to MK Dons, they did very well. Like, it was a good pass, good turn from Troy Parrott. And then he scores a good goal. But it's that thing again, isn't it, with Lee Burge, where, like, I know he had a good game overall, like, made some important saves, particularly later in the game, but he's got that mistake in him, hasn't he, Brett? It's like, people are starting to worry now about the goalkeeping situation and thinking, like, he's going to probably cost us points this season if we persist with him.
It's a really difficult one with Lee Burge, because as you said there, because throughout that game, I thought he had a really, really good game. You know, he caught a lot of crosses, made a lot of decent saves. A lot of them were straight at him, to be fair, but he dealt with everything. And it's the same old thing with a goalkeeper, isn't it? You make that one mistake and that is what you're going to get beaten with. And it was a terrible throw. But you say, Troy Parrott with an absolutely great finish. He had no chance on the actual shot himself. My concerns are, though, with Lee Burgess, they have got those rickets, but I think you've said it before in the pod, he's a League One goalie. League One goalies make mistakes. Now, unless we can get a Championship or a young Premier League goalie to replace him with, there's not that many people out there. Now, Patterson's going to have mistakes in him as well. My worry is that we keep just, like, we always seem to have a player we have to blame for everything.
Yeah.
There's always, we won 2-1 yesterday, but now we're going to spend quite a lot of time, and I'm doing it right now, talking about one mistake in that whole game. Bring Patterson in. Patterson's going to make mistakes. Do we keep then trying to get Patterson out? For me, here and now, I would stick with Burge in goal. I wouldn't drop him for that one moment, because I do think he had a decent game yesterday. It's not...
Malk's son on the reaction pod actually gave him man of the match. So it just shows the variety of opinion on him, because, when we threw this out on Twitter, asking people for topics to talk about, etc., quite a lot of the replies were about the goalkeeper. But then on the other side, like you say, you've got people who think he played quite well, other than that one error. It's a strange one, isn't it, Martin? Like Brett's just said, I've talked about this on the pod before. He's a League One keeper, so I think you're just going to expect the odd mistake with him. But I wonder if now Lee Johnson's looking at it and thinking, could we maybe go out and get somebody a bit more experienced at a higher level? Even if it's just to add decent competition in that area, because... I mean, we have only two senior keepers, so there is a case to be made that we could sign somebody, but it's about who's available, isn't it?
And Remy Matthews went to Palace, didn't he? So that's a bummer. with Burge, I think Burge falls into that category of players who... I'd liken him to Tom Flanagan, in that he'll do a decent job in League One. He's going to make some mistakes, but he's never going to step up with us. He's never going to be a Championship keeper. He's never going to be a Premier League keeper. And obviously that's got to be the aspiration. When we're building this squad now, we've got to look at players who are going to either be absolutely stand out in League One, or are going to be able to progress with the club and grow with the club as hopefully we go up. And, I think, I've said, we talked about with Nick Barnes on the pod last week, I would be looking at another goalkeeper for Burge, to replace Burge, if there's somebody available, because that is the one position... or one of the positions in the squad where you can go, we probably could do better in that position, and we are going to cost ourselves some points if Burge plays a full season. Now, I completely agree with Brett in terms of, you put Patterson in, he's going to make a few mistakes as well, but the difference is we don't know what Patterson's potential is. We've all got a fairly good grasp on where Burge's level and ceiling is as a football player. So you've got to kind of look at that and balance those things out. And to me, I would, you've seen some great goalkeepers come on loan into League One. Most of them came on emergency loans to play against us last season. But there are some good keepers out there who, could do a better job. But I think what was interesting yesterday is, like, that goal that we gave away, it came from Burge's throw, and it was a crap throw. But this season, we've seen Burge throw the ball out so much compared to what we've seen him do in the past two seasons. It's obviously a tactic that we've tried to employ. And, similarly to those teams that play out from the back, like MK Dons did yesterday, if we're going to do that with the keeper, you kind of got to go, you got to accept that one time out of 10 or one time out of 20, it's going to land us in a little bit of trouble, because we're trying to be progressive with it. So, if I wouldn't necessarily blame Burge for the tactic that's being employed. And I think, he came out and caught a great cross in the last couple of minutes of injury time that took a load of pressure off us and pretty much sealed the game out. So I think there was a lot of pluses from his performance yesterday. But then he had that one in the first half where he came rushing out and he was in no man's land, and the lad put it past the post.
Sliced it, didn't he?
Yeah, I was going to mention that, had my heart in my mouth a bit, to be fair. Like,
well, it's just a mixed bag from him, isn't it? I think we're going to get that in most games from him.
Yeah. You know that particular moment you've just touched on there, the one where he come flying out, he could have quite easily clattered their striker and brought him down for a penalty, couldn't he, Brett?
Like, easily.
Yeah. It's just I'm actually struggling to see where I'm at with Burge. I think I don't think I'd complain if we signed somebody. That's pretty much it. Like if we bring somebody in, I think I've got enough faith in the recruitment team to know that they would bring somebody good in, or at least better than Burge. I think that's, they're not going to sign somebody like a Remy Matthews that we just mentioned before. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So if they do sign someone, I think they're going to be a better goalkeeper than what we've got. So yeah. You know.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, no, you say that the fear was if you get just like for like again, if we can get better, then definitely bring someone else in, because he is that goalie position is a weak point in our team. You know, if we can get better, and as you say, the recruitment seems to be bang on at the moment. So yeah, if they bring anyone in, I'd be more than happy with that.
We haven't really touched on Patterson as well, though. People, I don't know whether they've soured on him, but I think there's definitely been a little bit of a change in opinion on him. I don't know if people are quite so sure he's ready yet.
Well, Patterson needs games, doesn't he? Patterson needs games, whether it's here or elsewhere. He needs to play 30 games this season.
That's something that Cameron Johnson's asked us, actually. He's asked us whether we should probably send Patterson out on loan to get guaranteed first-team football somewhere. It is an option, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I think, again, like we've got to get him playing this season, and whether it's in our first team or somebody else's, he's got to have a season where he's playing, you know, 25, 30, 35 games. He'd only get that if we put him in the first team, or we send him out on loan to a League Two club, but we can only do that if we bring somebody else in. So it's a little bit of a funny situation. It's probably one of those that's relying on something else to happen. It's a little bit of a domino effect that his footballing future for this season will be determined by what happens elsewhere in the transfer market.
Yeah. Oh, we'll touch on some other aspects of the game then. Dennis Sirkin's debut, Brett, how do you think he did? Tom Pugh on Twitter asked, if Sirkin is as good as Doyle or Sanderson, should we look into loaning more of the top six academy prospects? I think we'd all agree that it would be nice to have a few more top youngsters at the club, certainly. But yeah, Sirkin's debut then, what do you think of it?
I was really impressed with him. He played really, really well. There was a few like balls went a bit over hit sort of thing. But I think, again, just give the lad a break. He's literally been like here 2 minutes. He looked very assured at the back, some good tackles. He was linking up well with McGeady. We've got a really good player there. And on that first show, you know, the Spurs fans were like gutted that he left. You know, if we can bring in more players like that, then to say that when you talk about the recruitment team, that is a bang on signing. He's going to be really, really good for us.
Yeah, and it seems like Johnson's taking it slow with him. I mean, he brought him off after about 65 minutes. And then in his post-match, just mentioned, you know, he's had COVID, so we're being very careful with him. But yeah, he did very well, Martin, didn't he?
He did. I think if 09 had been fit, I doubt he would have started the game. I think he was kind of forced into making his debut probably a little bit earlier than we would have liked him to. But I thought he looked really assured, and he looks a good football player. He looks solid defensively. He put in a few nice balls down the wing to McGeady, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how McGeady performs. You know, he had such a season last season with Callum McFadzean behind him, so who knows what he'll do with a good full-back behind him. But obviously the difference, you know, with the question from Twitter there, Gav, obviously the big difference with Sirkin is he's our player. And the other lads mentioned have obviously been on loan. So I think it's nice to bring some top talent in on loan, but it's even better if we can get some players signed permanently who can, again, develop with us and grow with us, and who have the potential to step back up to the Premier League, you know, with a couple of seasons football under the belt.
Yeah, I mean, I made this point through the week, but, you know, a player like Sirkin, for instance, he's come from a top club training against, like, well, who plays right wing for Tottenham? And up front, you've got, like, Heung-min Son. You probably trained and played with Gareth Bale last season. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that on a training pitch, but in reality, he's never played a senior game till yesterday. So that was a big moment in his career for him to start a game in a competitive match against blokes, you know. I think his ceiling is just, you know, obviously his pedigree as a youngster is, they obviously clearly felt that he's going to go on and play Premier League football one day. And I think that brings the standards up at the club, like on the training pitch with our other young players, you know. He's got aspirations to play Premier League football, to play for England. And I think, you know, when you're bringing in a player like that, as opposed to a McFadzean who's just came out of non-league and played for Bury and played for Plymouth, I think standards-wise, that's very important at the club. The club need players like that involved, because eventually we would like to be back in the Premier League. We don't, you know, we don't want to languish in League One.
And, well, that's it.
Yeah, and someone made a very good point, was in that, like, young players, when they're like 18, 19 year old, their only aspiration in the career at that point is to get to the top, play for England, play in the Premier League, you know, make it, essentially. Once their mid-20s roll around and they get married and they get kids and, you know, there's all these other priorities aside from being on the training pitch every day, you know, doing the extra work away from the squad and staying late and all these other things that improve footballers and make them better players and enhance their careers. All these things go to the side when you've got other priorities as an adult. So having a younger team, in theory, should improve Sunderland. Like, I don't think anyone will disagree with that. I think we've seen for 3 years now that signing squad players and League One players, it doesn't work for us. It might work for other teams, you know. Other teams might get promoted by signing your Scowens and your O'Briens and McFadzens and all the rest of it. That might work for them. But for Sunderland, I think it's painfully clear that we need young players in the squad. And I would attribute that to the results we've seen so far. I think we've done well.
We should have been doing that three, four years ago. The minute we went down into League One, that is, and we all said it at the time, you know, that there was the time to get rid of all the dead wood, get rid of all the crap, and all we ever did was bring in more dead wood to get rid of again. You know, we should have been bringing in our own kids from the start, and they say loaning. You know, it's almost at the moment like they're playing sort of FIFA at the moment, bringing all these young kids to develop because it's working for us, and that's, you know, this is going to really do well for us, you know, not just short term, but long term. And then, you know, we're finally going to be, you know, if we carry on like this, be sustainable, bringing young players through. Again, more players like Sirkin, he will attract other young players who can't quite make it in the Premier League clubs, who don't want to sit on the bench. You know, they've got two or three internationals in front of them. Yet, I can go to Sunderland, I can get first team football at a young age, and I can be then develop my career. So, yeah, what are you saying?
It becomes exactly your selling point, doesn't it, Brett? It becomes your brand, massively. Essentially. Like, if you're a young player, you can come to Sunderland. A bit like we've seen at other clubs where, I don't know, as an example, Peterborough maybe is probably a League One example. A club where players go to and they know, like, they've got a really good track record of making players into Premier League players and getting them big moves and decent money. Obviously, I would like us to be a lot more than a Peterborough, but it's certainly a selling point, isn't it?
Massively. It's a massive selling point for a young player.
On the subject of young players, and we'll move quickly on to the Frederick Alves signing on Friday evening, as reported exclusively by Rota Report. 21-year-old Denmark under 21 national defender, Martin. £1 million West Ham paid for him in January from Silkeborg in Denmark. You know, sounds like a decent enough player, doesn't he? I say it sounds like, we need to see him in action, but the West Ham fans certainly seemed a bit disappointed that they'd let him leave in a similar way to the Sirkin deal. He's played a fair bit in pre-season for their first team, and then they haven't really signed many players, and they're letting somebody out on loan who probably would have played a little bit, which I think bodes well for us. If he's deemed worthy of Premier League football or playing for West Ham in the Cups, I think that bodes well for us, doesn't it?
It does. The only thing that concerns me is the fact that David Moyes signed him, which has to put a huge question mark over his ability.
I don't think there's any way David Moyes knew who Frederick Alves was when they signed him. That was probably done over his head.
I think from all reports, and obviously things that we've been able to read about him and videos that we've been able to watch on YouTube and stuff like that, he looks a good player. He's got a good reputation, hasn't he? He's got a decent amount of football already behind him. And, you know, he sounds like the type of player that we need in defence. He's a ball-playing defender, as he calls himself, so we'll see how true that is. He seems to be quite pacey, and that'll just add to it, you know. Whether he's been brought into play as a first-choice centre-half, you kind of think he obviously has been brought in with the intention of being a regular selection, wouldn't you? Because he wouldn't drop down to League One to not play regularly.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that probably forms part of the conversation, doesn't it, when you're speaking to these clubs. Like, if we're going to loan you him, we want him to play. There'll be some sort of guarantees over playing, I would think. And I think the signing of Alves and Doyle probably indicate we're going a different route with our central defenders. Like, I think eventually it'll be a case of, you know, Alves and Doyle as a very young pairing together playing, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it's right. And we sort of touched upon it earlier with Burge and how he's throwing the ball out, isn't he? So we are definitely sort of playing from the back. And we do want sort of ball-playing defenders, you know. it is interesting. We're going to have, you know, if we've got Sirkin, Doyle, and then Alves, who's like average age of about 12 at the back. It's going to be exciting. And we haven't got these sort of League One plodders, but it's going to be interesting how they come up against proper, you know, hard metal, strong League One attackers. That's going to be an interesting thing to see how they get on. You say if they can play the ball out, can they defend though? So it'll be interesting to see how they get on that aspect. But it's good. I think, say, it's just refreshing. I think we just need a right back, you know, to come in as well. And then that's, you know, it's a new back four for us this season.
Yeah. Tommy at McGeady Spin on Twitter asked us, do you worry that the age of our defensive signings may lack some experience? If we played Alves, Doyle and Sirkin, they'd have an average age of 19. I'm not worried. But what are you? I mean, Doyle's probably allayed them fears for me. Like, I think because I've seen a 17-year-old play with such confidence, and you know, and then I've watched Tom Flanagan for 4 years, who's like 10 years older than him. You know, it doesn't worry me in particular. But what about you, Martin? What do you think?
Well, I think you know, for any young player who we're going to bring in like that, they are going to make some mistakes. That's why they're here, to get experience, to make some mistakes, to learn the trade a bit more. It's whether the benefit that you get from them playing significantly outweighs the mistakes that they make. Now, in League One, we know the defenders that we've got already will make mistakes. And we know that there's a margin of positivity from them playing. Now, the benefit of the likes of, you know, Sirkin, Doyle and Alves and whoever else we bring in playing is, again, we don't know how good they can be. So the benefit that we get from it could be massive compared to the benefit that we're getting from some of the more experienced League One players. So you know, we've tried the likes of Jack Baldwin, Tom Flanagan, and we know that doesn't necessarily bring us success. So let's try something different and embrace it.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on it before there about the right back, Brett, and in his post-match, Johnson spoke about how he would have liked to have had a right back on the bench or starting. I think it's the first time I've actually heard him talk about the right back situation, and sort of, I don't think he was frustrated, but he certainly made it clear that he wants a right back. Is that our next priority, do you think, a right back? Because I think Winchester's done a decent job there, but we are like one injury away from sort of disaster in that position, aren't we?
Yeah, that's definitely got to be the next position to fill. So to be fair to Winchester, he's actually done an all right job, but he isn't a right back. And as you say, if he gets injured, we've got no one, you know. So that has to be the one to fix first.
With that right back position, I think it's interesting that like Johnson had Winchester at Oldham, and apparently Winchester was a right back at Oldham, and Johnson converted him to a central midfield player. So Johnson kind of knows Winchester's capability there, and I think he has done all right. But what you looked at yesterday, obviously we had 09 out through illness. Corey Evans got injured, and now Johnson's spoken about having two players for every position, hasn't he? And the four midfielders are obviously those two, Dan Neil and Winchester. You've got Winchester and Neil have been employed as fullbacks so far this season. And when Evans went off yesterday, we didn't have a central midfield player on the bench either. So we actually had to swap four positions to make that sub work. And that's a huge change in a team, especially in a tight game like that, you know, because Pritchard came on for Evans, didn't he? Pritchard went to attacking midfield. Embleton went out wide right. Gooch went back to fullback and Winchester came into the centre. And it was a massive change. We should have been in a position where we just swap like for like. So I can understand why he's probably getting a little bit frustrated, because you know right backs were desperately short of, and the knock-on effect from that is the disruption it causes in the central midfield.
It doesn't worry us too much, and I keep saying this, but I don't think we're going to get to a situation on the last day of the deadline where we haven't got what we need. We are definitely going to have those players, but I think now that the season's rocking and rolling, we're three games in, key positions should be filled. Like, you should have a left back, you should have a right back. You know, you should have somebody for every position at least. And then your late business for me should be, you know, depth, bringing in players. You know, maybe if we need another fullback on the left-hand side, we bring someone in there, another goalkeeper. But these are positions that we've already got filled. I guess the other alternative is that you bring up one of the under-23 players who are waiting for a chance, but then I think he saw quite a lot of them in pre-season, and the fact that they're not making the bench probably tells you he doesn't quite trust them yet to be able to come on and if we need them in a big game and not shit their pants, basically. So, yeah. I mean, in the central midfield position, I don't think there's any under-23s So we're already playing them, aren't we? Dan Neil is the best of that group, and he hasn't missed a minute, like pre-season or since the season started. I think Dan Neil's probably played more than anybody else, which I know we've already talked about Dan Neil, Brett, but that shows how well he's thought of, doesn't it? Like Dan Neil's regard. I was probably, if you'd asked this before the game, I was expecting Dan Neil to maybe drop out just for the balance of the team. Obviously, we didn't know that 09 was injured. Ill. So it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think Johnson clearly likes him.
Yeah, he does. And it's interesting, he's played probably more minutes than anybody else, but yesterday was probably the first time in his actual preferred position.
Yeah.
And as I say, I think he took his opportunity with both hands. He looks a very, very good player. And I think Johnson's now got, it's a nice little headache to have in that sort of midfield three. If you've got sort of Corey Evans, Neil, Embleton, and then obviously you've got 09 as well to come into that. And then obviously Winchester, if we do get a right back. So there's sort of five players there for those three positions. And he's got a nice little headache once all are fit and once all available to play in the actual centre of the park.
Yeah. Right. Let's quickly look ahead to Burton then before we go. Tuesday night, the games just don't stop coming. They've actually had a decent start to the season, to be fair. I said before season, I think they'll make the playoffs. I like the way they played that last season when Hasselbank went back in there. He's clearly, you know, a good manager, done well at Burton before. They beat everyone's pre-season promotion favourite, mm-hmm. Ipswich 2-1 on Saturday with a late penalty. That's a great result for them, and it shows that, you know, we need to be on our guard on Tuesday night, because it's not been a happy hunting ground, Burton, for us. I always sort of, when I say we're playing them, I think, it's when the Mags went down that time and we took the piss out of them for having to play Burton, it just seems every time we play them, it comes back to haunt us. But yeah, they do look dangerous, Brett, don't they? I'm not sort of writing the game off or anything, but it's away from home against a decent team. I mean, we want to keep winning, but would a point be so bad on Tuesday?
A point wouldn't be the worst result in the world, but I think the way we're sort of playing at the moment, and the way, you know, don't forget, we've already beaten, you know, two other promotion or top, you know, sort of favourites for, you know, in this league. You know, Wigan were heavily favourites after who they brought in. The Dons, they're going to be up there, you know.
Yeah,
So not top two, but they're going to be play around them sort of playoff positions. They looked a good team yesterday. I don't think there's anyone in this league we should fear. You know, and if you said to me now, would you be happy with a draw? Well, no, I want us to win every game, you know, but yeah, it wouldn't be the worst result in the world. You know, 7 points out of the first nine is a decent enough record, but we want to be going to these games and looking to win.
Yeah. How important would a win be, do you think, Martin, at this stage of the season, just keeping that momentum going?
I think it's really important when you look at the games that we've got coming up after that. Obviously, I think we've got Wimbledon on Saturday, haven't we? Then I think we've got Wickham, Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth, all coming up in close succession. There's going to be some big games coming up. So that, you know, the more points we can put on the board now and go into those games with more momentum and hopefully a couple of other signings, the better for us. I think the interesting thing on Tuesday is going to be the injuries that we've got. Obviously, Corey Evans went off. Lee Burge needed treatment, and we'd ran out of subs, hadn't we? And you know, it could be interesting to see who went in goal if Lee Burge had to go off and we couldn't bring the sub keeper on. So whether he's going to be fit for Tuesday is going to be an interesting one. So it's going to be a tough game, but you know, if we can get 3 points, it sets a Wimbledon game at home up on Saturday nicely, and then it sets up this sort of tough run of fixtures that we've got. And if we can get through that, you know, with a couple of draws and a couple of wins, then that's that first stage of the season really nicely handled.
Yeah.
New signings bedded in, and it gives us a really good platform to go on from, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So I know you said you obviously want us to win every game, Brett, but how do you see it playing out? What's your head telling you?
I think it'll be a tough game. It'll be a close game. I can actually see us winning 2-1 again. I think, you know, I think we do look like there's always we can concede a goal, but up front, the forward four we've got of Embleton, McGeady, Gooch and Stewart is very good for this league. You know, them four are going to score goals. They're going to make opportunities. I can say 2-1. I can see a lot of, as it stands, I can see a lot of 2-1s this season.
Yeah. I'm fancying us to win. Like I said, I would take a point, definitely. I think, like I say, it's just a difficult game midweek, another away. To be fair, the crowd have been playing their part in these games already. So it would be, and I think we should sell out Burton, or if we haven't already. So if you know the crowd can play their part, the players are clearly confident because we're winning games. Like you've just said, the front four are playing magnificently, so they've all done their bit so far. So I think that actually makes us probably more of a threat to them than they are to us. They're going to be looking at us and thinking, "Oh, you know, their centre forward's just ridiculous at the minute. Gets himself in all kinds of positions. We need to be on our game." Then you've got the quality that we're having, McGeady and Embleton sort of picking the passes. Dan Neal, even, you know, I think they're going to have to be very physical with us and press us and try and harry us. Otherwise, we're going to have spells in the game where we dominate possession and we create chances. That is the one big improvement for me, Martin, like, that I've seen. Even in, and I know pre-season is hard to judge, but even in pre-season, we look like a lot more creative and better on the ball, on the floor, like, than we have been. Last season, very reliant on one player just to create everything, where he's clearly looked at that and thought, how can I improve the overall output of the team? And that's why we're seeing Gooch creating chances, Stewart winning us penalties, McGeady still getting in amongst the assists, Dan Neal getting assists, Embleton, who's just added a whole new dimension to the attack. So it makes, you know, we're a very dangerous team, hard to predict team, I think.
We are, and it's, again, it's going to be interesting to see how we kind of, what our normal is going to be as we kind of establish ourselves over the coming weeks. But there has been a definite and noticeable change in how we play. We're a lot more progressive with the ball. We're kind of looking forward for a pass rather than looking backwards and taking the easy pass. And, you know, there was a couple of occasions yesterday when, you know, both Dan Neal and Elliot Embleton had the ball, and, you know, they took a couple of touches, turned and got themselves in a position to play it forward rather than playing an easy ball back, which last season Scowen would have played an easy ball back. Power would have played an easy ball back. So, you know, there's a mentality in the team that's obviously been, you know, you'd think it's been drilled into them over the summer. And it's kind of the mentality that Lee Johnson spoke about when he came in, isn't it? And it's bearing fruit now. But there just seems to be a lot more attacking intent. And I think it's helped. Obviously, I know we've talked a little bit about Ross Stewart, but like his movement and ability to hold the ball up and come in deep and drop in deep and just take a touch, that gives the midfield time to get up closer to him as well. And last season, that gap between the midfield and striker was quite huge on occasion, wasn't it? And that kind of split the team up a bit and didn't enable us to get forward. So I think it's everything combined, and Stewart's, you know, that glue within that. But then you've got the cuteness of Embleton and Neal and Gooch as well, who looks a different player this season. So it's all very promising, and it's exciting to watch at the minute.
When you say about Stewart there, I must admit, obviously, yesterday was the first time I've actually seen him live, and his movement, what you don't obviously see on the camera or on your streams last season, he is everywhere. And his touch and bringing everyone else into play is really, really good. So he's a massive plus for us this season.
Yeah. We'll end on that positive note then. Thanks for joining us, lads. We'll be back after Burton with a reaction pod. I'll probably be hosting that one. And then we've got a nice little surprise for everyone ahead of Wimbledon, which we won't reveal. We're just going to drop that on you. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.